A special evening to be able and thank so many wonderful people who have given many years of great service to the students of our community, and thank you in advance, but there'll be a lot more of that later. I just want to let you know, if you don't pick the right present, there's five more actually to the agenda, the items that we have listed. Oh, I think Marilyn may want to say something. There's a pregnant pause here. We're going, okay.
I'm sorry about that pause. The order of presentations has us with student recognitions first and then retiring employee recognition second. And as the students have not yet arrived, I'm wondering if it would be possible to honor our retiring employees first.
Okay. I think everybody appreciates you didn't ask to move that to the end of the program. But, seeing no objection to that, then I'd like to begin the recognition for our students. No, we have to go back. Are we, just so I'm not too confused, are the students here with us now? Okay, so we'll ask that the... Okay, is that fine,
okay,
Marilyn?
Sure.
To do that? Okay. So what I would ask is that the students who are being recognized tonight by Ms. Delkiskamp, I believe, is doing that for us. Please, Rita, thank you very much.
Yes, it's working. Okay, it's my honor tonight to introduce two of our employees that work with our migrant education program, and they're going to come up with some students we want to recognize. And like I said, this is our migrant education program, and the recognitions are for three students from Laguna Middle School and San Luis Obispo High School. So if Barbara Adler and Barbara Wright could please come up and bring your students along. This is Barbara Wright and Barbara Adler, and they are migrant education instructional aides who work here in our district, and they do a lot. They do a lot for our migrant families and for our migrant students, and they help the students every day. But this particular assignment of coaching...
To move closer.
I can? Okay. So I'd like to say thank you for having us. And we at Migrant Education thank you for celebrating the accomplishments of our migrant students, Elizabeth Gutierrez, Sitlali, and Natalia Hernandez. On the weekend of May 4th, nearly 800 students from California, Texas, and Arizona gathered at Ventura College for the 6th annual Migrant Speech and Debate Tournament. Now, this event, it connects migrant students with Hispanic leaders in government, education, and industry. They were also migrant at one time. They continued on in higher education, and they are now leaders here in California. Last year, our district students won trophies, and again this year, they surpassed what we expected of them. And tonight, I would like to congratulate Sitlali Hernandez. Sitlali, would you wave? From San Luis High School, she won first place for 10th grade prepared speech and second place for extemporaneous speech. Her sister, Natalia? is a student at Laguna Middle School. She won first place for an extemporaneous speech at the 8th grade level and second place for a prepared speech. Lastly, I would like to introduce Elizabeth Gutierrez. And I'd also like to thank the librarian that helped Elizabeth and I at the San Luis Library. They would always just be very accommodating to us, and we took a poster off the wall, and we used some of that in the speech. And it really worked well because Elizabeth won first place for prepared speech, 10th grade, in English. And proudly present to the board Citlali, Elizabeth, and Natalia. And also, we would like to dar gracias a sus padres para enviarnos tales estudiantes sobresalientes. Favor de levantar los padres, por favor. Los padres. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barbara, Rita, and both Barbara. Not only any governmental body, I guess is the best way to put it, to learn how the systems are working and how it works with people with physical disabilities and others. So I wanted to thank you for being here tonight, and you're always welcome to come back. Thank you. And now I'd like to ask Mr. Robinette to come up.
There is the adage that one should not follow where the path may lead, but go instead where there is no path and leave a trail. And as I look at this list of employees who are leaving us this year, it is with such assurance that they have each in their own way blazed a trail for the children of our district. And from my conversations with many of them, it is evident that there is much trailblazing in their future. In fact, I'm a little worried about that group in the back being on their own with nothing to do during the day. It is with a sort of bittersweet pride that we honor the retirees of 2007-2008. Our list tonight has 42 names on it, more than has perhaps ever left this district at one time. I believe that's the case. It represents about 5% of the entire employees in our school district. A collective 1,000-plus years of service to this district, but we won't talk about that, and a representative group of whom there is no replacing, because every job is really just a self-portrait of the person who did it. And I profess that there are 42 beautiful portraits here in this list. In years past, we have asked principals and supervisors to come forward and share stories and tributes to our retirees. And if we went off this past practice, we would end this portion, we got started a little late, we would end this portion of the evening about 10:20 p.m. and then move on to the rest of the board's agenda. So I in no way want to diminish the accomplishments and worthiness of that sort of tribute, but we also need to be time sensitive, so we will be simply asking each supervisor to come and share the names of those leaving their school or department, maybe some tiny little thing, but more or less the names. And our board president, Dr. Valentine, will congratulate each employee as they're called up. We can leave them all up here for a photo opportunity, and we'll have the opportunity to talk to all these people at a short reception afterwards. So it might not be as special as a loving tribute, but even these 42 do have to go to work tomorrow, so at least for a couple more weeks. And so I'll model this, and so because I have somebody who recently left my department, and
bittersweet is a good phrase to use in describing the retirement of five teachers from San Luis Obispo High School, and three of those teachers are here tonight, although I'll name all five. First, I'd like to introduce Mike Aiello from our science department. Mike's a former state teacher of the year. Mike, next, I'd like to introduce John, also known as Colonel Grant, from our business department, computer science, football coach, and Marine Corps Colonel, John Durant. And then also with us tonight is Rick Ernstrom, who has taught in the same classroom for the last 39 years. As well as being one of the legendary swim coaches in the state of California. Our other two retirees who aren't here tonight are Suzanne Ritalo from our English department and Carol Stein from our special education department. These five teachers, ladies and gentlemen, have an accumulated 163 years of service to public education. Thank you. Congratulations.
Wow. I'm Jim Nicholas, principal at Monarch Grove. Good evening.
I have six teachers retiring from the Monarch Grove staff, and that's that. Can't describe what that feels like. But Rich Gunther, sixth grade teacher. Mick Aldworth. George Nichols. George didn't make it tonight. How about Linda Schmeling? Carol Gunther. And we also are losing Sammy Corey, who I don't believe is here either. But Rick threw out the 5% figure. This is 33% of the school here, right there.
It's with a great deal of sadness that I introduce you to Miss Pink Flamingo herself, Janice Aldworth, and she will be sorely missed by all of us who work with her and love her.
That's what we've been saying, too. We'd love to vote no. I'm Mary Lou Gooden from Los Ranchos Elementary, and we have the amazing Julie Klopping, who has been there at the same school for 35 years. And the remarkable Paul Reinhardt, who has been there for 25 years.
Diane Frost, I'm the principal of Los Osos Middle School. We are losing three staff members this year, starting with Mr. Mark Talka. He's been in education for 32 years, has taught special education and PE, and has been our athletic director. Mrs. Diana Barnhart has been in education for 39 years. And you may know that she also is a California State Teacher of the Year. And then finally, our last staff member could not be here tonight. Sandy Pardini, our school counselor, is not here. We are losing her to retirement this year after 32 years in education.
It's my pleasure to have worked with Donna Guild this year. Donna, please come up. It was my first year in this position and Donna's last year, but I'm so glad I was able to work with her. I just wanted to say that as she leaves, she takes so much knowledge and experience with her. But she's been a true leader, and with her leadership, she's built a team of staff members who are going to be able to carry on and make her proud.
Good evening. I'm Jackie Kirk Martinez, Director of Student Services, and I would like to welcome, and we will sorely miss Sarah Levin, our speech and language pathologist. Big shoes to fill, and it's a hard position to fill. We love her.
Good evening. I'm Janet Gould, principal of Del Mar, and we have four staff members that are retiring this year, three teachers who are here this evening and have over 100 years of teaching experience. Jana Colston. Lynn Adams. And Jenny Phipps. And not here this evening is our librarian, Margaret Giever, who's also retiring.
Good evening. I'm Joyce Hunter, principal at Sinsheimer, and we have four staff leaving us this year we're going to dearly miss. And I'm going to ask Margot Smith if you could please come up. Margot is here with us this evening. She is leaving us after 8 years at Sinsheimer and 12 years working as a library media specialist. We're going to miss her so much. Also, Beverly Marty, who is our secretary, most dearly loved as Marty because we have two Bevs in our secretary and our clerk, and we have to distinguish them, as you can imagine. We're going to miss her so much. Sandy Beck, after Sandy Beck, after 35 years of education, we're going to miss so much. And third grade, has taught in numerous schools. And also, who's not with us tonight is Sarah Loven. And Sarah, I know, we just introduced Sarah with right here with us. But she's also retiring from our school and is going to be sorely missed. So thank you so much.
I want you to know, Rick Ernstrom was my high school wood shop teacher. Man, we've been around a long time, huh? Yeah, that's right.
You still got all your thumbs? It's okay.
It is my pleasure to introduce Pam Zirian from Hawthorne School. Pam has been nominated Teacher of the Year, mentor teacher for many, many student teachers, teacher leader, and teacher in charge. And she's going to truly be missed. She is awesome.
And Morro Bay High School has two teachers that are retiring but aren't able to be here tonight. One is Dennis Bailey. He started our AP Spanish program. He's been in Spanish all the years at Morro Bay, and he started our AP program over 20 years ago. And Debbie Bonheim, who came to us 10 or 11 years ago in French, and she's been our French teacher now for quite a long time. And our person who is here who's retiring is Susan Cox, our career technician. Susan, come on up. Susan reopened our program and did a fabulous job.
And I have the sad but sweet pleasure, I guess, of saying farewell to a person who's been in our district many, many years and has been such a service to the superintendent's office, and certainly in the years that I've been here, just a wonderful help to the operation of our school district. I'd like to call Judy Huelga forward, please.
I do want to mention several people on this list that were not able to be here tonight. I'm frantically crossing off, so I don't want to leave anybody out. And if somebody's here and I read your name, come on up. So we have some other individuals who are retiring this year from our grounds department: Steve Ebert from Laguna Middle School, Principal Steve Anderson from Laguna Middle School, also theater and social studies teacher Francie Deitchman. From Bishop's Peak Elementary School, Fran Harrell, who I know would have been here, but she was actually ill today. from the Fiscal Services Department, Kathy Hunter. From C.L. Smith, we have the team. They've been job share partners forever, so they're retiring together. The team of Susan Lindgren and Pam White. Mm-hmm. And from our PE department, who has served faithfully in elementary PE for years, Mr. Jim Perry. From Pacheco Elementary School, Candy Rothler. And from Teach Elementary School, Debbie Valentine. Mm-hmm. And I think that completes our list. So I think it's time for a reception for all these people.
Let's go with that.
We're going to stop the meeting. Everybody go to the back.
We'll do this. No, they're going to stop.
Okay, thank you. We're going to resume the meeting for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board. And the next order of business is the minutes of two past hearings. And I'm going to ask Marilyn Rogers, who, because I was absent from the next meeting on May 8th, to chair this portion. Thanks.
Would someone like to move approval of the minutes of the special board meeting of May 8th?
I so move. And I'll second that.
Moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Unger. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. Abstention?
Me.
Mr. Spadafore abstains. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. And finally, the minutes of May 20th, 2008. Do we have a review and a motion and a second, please?
Move approval of the minutes of May 20th.
We have a motion by Marilyn. Do we have a second? And Mr. Millar seconds it. Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Oh, that's right. We have an abstention from Mr. Unger on that, so it's 6-0.
John?
Did you have a
Chair?
Yes, sir. Mr. Buckman?
I want to just make it clear on the minutes of May 8th that I have an abstention on that, please.
Thank you, Mark. And there's also an abstention on May 8th from Adrian also. Have all the tardy and absent people now reported in? Okay, we're good. I understand at the time of the meeting there was no correspondence. Is that correct, Ms. Holmes?
Yes.
Thank you. And now there's an opportunity at the board meeting for any member of the public that wishes to address the board regarding school business to do so if you wish. I have no sheets from anybody. Is there anybody who has a last-minute thought of doing that? Marilyn? Or is we do have some. I'm sorry. Ms. DeBink, please. Good evening. She's an art teacher. She doesn't know. There we go.
Thank you. Dr. Valentine, Dr. Matakovich, Mr. President, members of the board, ladies and gentlemen. I just wanted to thank the board for the new kiln, San Luis Obispo High School. I'm Sherry DeBink, chair for visual and performing arts at San Luis Obispo High School. 15 years ago when I arrived, we had a kiln that was sort of on its last legs. And we now have a brand new kiln, thanks to the funding from the state and for the board approving of that project. So thank you very much. Our students are really appreciating all of the wonderful projects that are coming to them from this wonderful piece of equipment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for coming tonight to let us know that. It's good to hear about that and how the students are benefiting from that. Next on the agenda, we're going to begin with reports, and we're fortunate tonight to have a new member of the student body from Morro Bay High School. Matt Irons, if you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about.
Yeah, my name is Matt Irons, and I'm incoming president for Morro Bay High School in the 2008-2009 school year. I'm acting or sitting for Ms. Dawn Williams tonight, and I will be board representative for next year.
Well, we're glad to have you here, and we're looking forward to the full next year with you present also. But you have some news for us tonight.
Yeah, I have some points. First off, I'd like to review the schedule left for this year. This Saturday at 5 o'clock p.m., we will be having our spring sports banquet for our spring athletes. There will be a barbecue at this banquet, and it's in the cafeteria, and I'd like to invite all board members to attend that. Of course, we have finals starting on the June 10th, and that night we will also have senior tribute and awards at 6 p.m. in the large gym. And on the 11th, we have our senior outing at Paso at the Ravine Water Park. And finally, on the 12th, we have our last day of school, and graduation starts at 6 o'clock in our stadium area. And I'd also like to discuss some of next year's goals for our ASB class in our school. First, we'd like to increase city involvement, getting residents more aware of the events that will be occurring. Secondly, 2009 marks the 50th graduating class at Morabe High School, and we'll be recognizing them and all previous classes. And finally, we want to increase student involvement next year, so we'll have suggestion boxes and things of that nature to increase student involvement in board activity.
Thank you very much, Matt, and we look forward again to having you with us during the next school year and appreciate the time that you put into this, because I think we appreciate it, and the audience and the people who watch this on Sunday love to hear about what's happening at the high school. And also, if it's okay, later in the year, towards the end of your senior year, if you'd let us know how you did on your goals,
it'd
be great to hear how you're making progress with that. Thanks very much. And then
you,
of course, can stay for as much of the meeting as you want, and otherwise, we'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Now, other school staff, administrators, or board members with reports during this period? Mark?
Hi. Really briefly, I have been trying to attend open houses. I was able to get to Sinsheimer, and I was able to attend the recorder concert and the band performance and the barbecue, and then had to go to a meeting out at Bellevue Santa Fe where some of the parents are asking to have a PTA formed, so I attended that meeting. I did get to attend my first meeting as a CSBA delegate, and at that meeting the delegates got together and worked out what if there were tax increases, if there was enhancements to revenue, what would be acceptable to CSBA members in terms of that. And I thought that this would be a very divisive topic. I thought possibly tear CSBA apart. And in fact, it was well done. It was well discussed, well debated, and there were three items that we agreed to. So now that the lobbyists for CSBA will be able to go to meetings and say, yes, we can support that, or no, we can't support that. So it was an exceptionally good meeting.
Chris?
Yeah, and we were proud to have Bark as a member of the CSBA Delegate Assembly. The three things that Mark talked about and that CSBA believes are important, if the state is going to look at revenues, and we believe absolutely that cuts should be, that any discussion of cuts should be accompanied by discussions of revenue enhancements. And the three things that California School Boards Association landed on were what we call adequacy, equity, and simplicity when we're evaluating ideas for taxes, increased revenues. It was a great meeting, and I'm really glad that Mark was able to be there. I think we'll be served well by having Mark on the Delegate Assembly. One of the highlights for me of being able to go to the CSBA Delegate Assembly and then the Legislative Action Conference was the march on the governor's office that we took on Monday morning. About 200 school board members marched on the governor's office with the resolutions that we had passed as school boards, decrying the cuts in education that the governor had proposed. We waited about 30 minutes in front of the governor's office before anybody came out, and in fact, no one did come out. We were ignored. It was very disappointing, and we were very unhappy with the governor's what we felt was ignoring the will of several hundred school board members representing several hundred school boards in California and the children of California. I was able to go to the Del Mar open house with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. It was great. Lots of folks to see there. I got to go to the Morro Bay Band concert. And I think something I'd just like to recognize, and a person that I'd like to recognize, is one of our students named Tyler Hoyt. Tyler's a junior, I believe, at Morro Bay High School. He's a cross-country star, a leader at the high school. And last Saturday, I was invited to go to his Eagle Scout Court of Honor It was very touching, and Tyler and all the guys there were just great. I would like to point out that Tyler's Eagle Project, and one of the things that Eagle Scouts have to do is a project which benefits the community, was a concrete sign for Los Osos Middle School. And so Tyler raised the money, he organized it, got it together, and built it. And so we thank Tyler. Tyler is also the son of Nancy Hoyt, who's one of our school employees. So congratulations to Tyler.
Thank you very much, Chris. Adrian?
I'm glad Chris was out there in a political march on the Capitol. Is Tyler Hoyt Homer Hoyt's grandson by any chance? Dr. Hoyt, who used to teach at Cal Poly? No? Okay. I did go to San Luis Obispo High School open house, set by Dr. Valentine, which was fun. But I never got that far out of the gym because they had these great chairs that the art club was auctioning off, these painted chairs, each one unique and beautiful. So I bid on some of those, and I had to wait till the bidding stopped to see if I got mine or not. And then I had to drive home and get my checkbook and come back and go to the art place and get my chair, and the student carried it out for me. And by then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to get in my car and go. But I had a great time with the art club at San Luis Obispo High School open house, and I love the chair I bought.
Thank you, Adrian. Catherine?
Yes, hi. I would like to commend Frank Warren for the work that he did on the 24-hour relay. I happened to be there for all 24 hours, and it was quite an event. It is amazingly organized. It's like a small army of students, including teams from Morro Bay High School, and it's what he manages to do without lecturing and preaching to the kids is to show them that they can have fun with their friends for 24 hours without drugs or alcohol involved, and it's really a well-demonstrated lesson. And so I'd like to thank him, and following on the heels of our report on healthy kids, that seems like a very important message to be sending. And also was able to visit Del Mar with Mr. Unger and Baywood Open House as well. And Sinchheimer. Oh, that's right. Sinchheimer, great band concert. So that's my report.
Thank you, Catherine. Dr. Valentine?
Just wanted to speak, first of all, as a parent of an alumna of San Luis Obispo High School's class of 2004 and father of a daughter who played softball, that I just got a text message from that daughter while we were sitting here announcing that her teammate and San Luis Obispo High School alumna, Katie Burkhart, just won the College World Series winning pitcher.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. I think her record this year was 42-3 after all was said and done for Arizona State.
There was a point on television. She was on ESPN all weekend, and I'm sure she was tonight as well, but where Arizona State had scored 41 runs at that point in the tournament and that Katie had given up three.
Yeah.
You will win most games with that kind of pitching.
Yeah, thank you. And then finally, Catherine and Mark and Marilyn, myself and Walt, with Dr. Valentine and Dr. Matakovich, visited Loma Vista, which is a continuation school. And for myself, it was a, pardon me, community school. Thank you. For myself, it was a very important visit, and we were. I think we spent about 2 hours with the assistant principal. And there are programs out there for situations where you can hope that improvement occurs. And I want to say and thank everyone who works out there and for the fact that Dr. Matakovich put the trip together, that it was very informative and very enlightening to see that school. It's a new facility also at the the County Department of Education. So any other comments? We're good? Okay. We have the Mark will do the report on the ROP program, Regional Occupational Program.
Thanks. Thanks to the board for letting me represent it at the regional ROP meeting, and I sit on the ROP board representing this group. There was a meeting last week, and it came to my attention as I was going through the agenda that San Luis Coastal offers 15 ROP classes. It's only, Lucia Mar offers one more. So of all the districts in the county, we offer one less than the others, but the range of classes, agriculture, construction, all the way through welding, is phenomenal. And many of these classes fulfill the A to G requirements for graduation. So they're an alternative way for students, those students that may need hands-on activity, and those students that are not necessarily going on to college, to fulfill their educational experience. So the other thing that I noted, and that I would love to see something happen, is there was a glitch in LA Unified's application last year, which opened up a lot of opportunities for the other districts around the state. And both of our high schools, the cap, the number of students that we'll get funded for, increased dramatically. In San Luis Coastal, we have the ability for 162 students to be funded. And right now we're sitting with 137. And this is definitely a situation where if you don't use it, you'll lose it. So if there's any way that you can convince or get a word out to students to take ROP classes, this would be a good time to do it, because otherwise I think those classes are probably going to end up reverting back to LA Unified. The last piece that I have is a letter from Jack O'Connell that was sent out to many of the superintendents about the implementation for career technology education. But the one paragraph that I thought was particularly of interest was, the development of CTE courses qualifying for UC CSU admission has been an important priority of mine, Jack O'Connell, since taking office. I am pleased to report that over the past 5 years, the number of career technology education courses qualifying for UC CSU admission has expanded from 284 to the current level of 5,614. And again, I think that this is just a phenomenal opportunity. It wasn't available when I was in school, and I think that we should urge as many students as possible to take these ROP classes if they're struggling in their other classes.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you for putting in the time to bring that information, which is important. Ms. Kirk-Martinez, please, regarding the Medi-Cal administrative activities update. Thank you.
Good evening. Tonight I bring to you an update on the Medi-Cal administrative activities over the last several years. As you can see by the graph and your report, we continue to do the surveys 4 times a year. We have several participants. We changed our vendor this last year, and it has helped us to make sure that we are very, very secure if there were to be an audit. Midway through this year, there was a little bit of a scare that the MAW, which it's known as, would be reduced or cut from education, and we were assured that it would continue this next year. So we're getting ready to start doing that this next year already in September. The next survey is actually due during the summer, and under the MAW activities, we're able to do it the day we get back. So we'll start surveying as soon as we get back to school. Remember, the Medi-Cal advisory, the Medi-Cal administrative activities are activities that help support our students in our community, in our schools, to access medical services, as well as coordinate agencies together and help to get insurance to families, such as Medi-Cal, Healthy Families, supports for mental health services. Department of Social Services also has a medical service department. As you can see, over the years, we have increased our dollars. Dollars are slowly cut from Medi-Cal and medical activities. However, we are still increasing our participants, which help us keep our revenues in throughout the surveys. Okay. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, thank you.
Do you need additional information?
Mr. Millar-Wall.
The point you just made, the flattening of the revenues with this still increasing number of participants, whoops, sorry about that, does that, it suggests to me that we are probably capturing pretty close to all of what we're entitled to in reimbursements? Is that accurate, or is it more reflected because of the decrease in certain reimbursements?
It's a combination of decreasing in reimbursements. However, we are also very conservative. So we are looking at it with a fine-tooth comb, and when these surveys are completed, we send them to our vendors. We analyze them with our vendors. They're returned back to us. We change the coding, which has a dollar value attached to them, and then we resubmit them. So we are using a very conservative coding system.
And I just want to say that this is an example of the staff administration working on ways to increase revenues and increase our reimbursements. I remember when we voted for this a few years ago, and it's been a terrific thing, and the program exceeded my expectations, and I think the public should be reassured that we've got some good folks looking for all the dollars they can find.
Adrian?
Just to review what this really means, it's not like giving... it's being reimbursed for services that we would give anyway. Isn't that right? It's like doing paperwork for things that happen just because they happen in schools, like psychologist reports on students or...
That's different. That's called LEA billing.
Oh, what's it called again?
Local education... agency, thank you, LEA
okay.
billing, and that is for only special education services.
So I'm getting those two confused.
Right, it comes under the same umbrella, mm-hmm. but it's two separate funds. The LEA billing is restricted.
Mm-hmm.
This MAW funding is unrestricted, meaning it goes into the general fund. It's captured. Certain number of dollars are given back to the sites, and then the sites are able to utilize. Dollars
that part I understand.
Discretionary.
But what are we billing for? That's my question, I guess, then. Exactly.
It's a heightened awareness to each site to make sure that they are distributing flyers, getting information, meeting with families, meeting with low socioeconomic families to make sure that they can get the healthy families, get dental insurance, get them seen for vision services. So all of those things didn't necessarily happen the way they are now. 5 years ago, we didn't have flyers on our front desk. We didn't have things posted. We didn't give all of this information out to these families. And it has proven that we've been able to get more families into the medical agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Any other questions? Chris has one.
I would just like to point out that that Jackie talks about the purpose of this money is to inform families of state aid, particularly health insurance for kids. And I think one of the other tragedies and travesties of the proposed state budget is tremendous cuts in programs that would serve kids and help kids.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Thank you very much, Jackie, for that. Thank you. Next, we have two resolutions dealing with the November 2008 election. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I'm going to pass the microphone over to Kim Holmes, who will explain the resolution before the board. It's a routine matter that the board needs to do in order to participate in the upcoming elections.
Thank you, Kim.
You seven school board members have seats that are up for election every even-numbered year. And for this coming election in November, there are two seats from Trustee Area 1 here in San Luis Obispo, one full-term seat from the coastal area and a half-term, and that would be the seat that Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers is currently filling. Because she was appointed to fill a seat that technically doesn't expire until 2010, the elections code requires that her appointment only be valid till the next election. So her appointment is going to conclude in December, and she and possibly someone else who might be interested must run for that remaining 2 years through 2010. In order for your seats to appear on the ballot in November, you must adopt the first resolution calling for an order of election, and we submit that to the county superintendent of schools, who collects those from every school district, submits them then to the elections office at the county of San Luis Obispo to prepare the ballot. The second resolution given to you is to consolidate our election with everything on the general election, and that's merely to simplify the process so that there's not a separate ballot for us, and consolidate the costs so that we share those amongst all agencies that are holding elections in November.
Okay, so then we should have two separate votes.
Yes.
So the vote for resolution number 160708, I'll entertain a motion.
John, I'm not sure which one you're on. I have a question
about the first one, order of election.
Okay. If I could just ask maybe the superintendent or Kim a question. On board policy 9220, when it talks about any person is eligible to be a board of education member, and it lists the qualifications. And what I thought I just heard you say is that you need to be in a certain trustee area. Should that maybe not tonight, obviously, but the bylaws don't reflect the trustee area condition.
They don't. We could do some research to see if that would be an important factor of our bylaws. The existence of our trustee areas is a component of the creation of the school district,
right,
by law when we unified in 1964.
My concern is that someone might read this opening paragraph and say, oh, this is what I need to do, and just mm-hmm. feel that they can run from anywhere within the district. So it's something for a further future down the road.
We'll look into that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for pointing that out. So is there anyone who would like to make a motion on the first resolution?
I'll move approval of resolution 160708.
And do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Mark Buckman. Any discussion? Seeing none, do you want to call the vote?
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
That passes 7-0.
Thank you very much. And then, Kim, do you need to do a little introduction for the next resolution, 170708?
The first thing I'll tell you is that on page 4.5 there is a typo. It says it's resolution 18, which is actually item number 5. This is resolution 17.
Okay.
And this is the resolution that requests the County of San Luis Obispo to consolidate our vacancies on the general ballot with everything else. So it'll just save us some money.
Okay.
It's not required, but if you didn't do this, you would have a separate election and pay the full cost.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd entertain a motion regarding resolution 170708.
I move that we adopt and pass resolution 170708.
We have a motion by Ms. Dickinson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
And a second by Ms. Rogers. Any discussion? Seeing none, Ms. Hughes, would you like to call the roll on this, please?
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes,
Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers? Passes 7-0.
Thank you very much, Kim, for doing that. And the next resolution item, number 180708, urging full federal funding for education, will be presented by Dr. Valentine.
Yes, thank you. The board provided staff direction at the last board meeting to draft a resolution calling for full federal funding of federal education programs, which we have presented tonight. In the course of that discussion, there was suggestions perhaps to go beyond simply the calling of full federal funding to comment on budget issues and political issues in general. And not knowing the board's wishes on that particular piece, we thought it's easier to add provisions rather than subtract. What we've provided the board tonight is the basic resolution that was requested, which was for full federal funding, and staff would take direction if revisions are required, and we can bring that back if that happens.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Valentine. And this is something that Adrian had initiated, and we can either do a motion, have a second, and then have a discussion, or we can have a discussion. I'll leave that up to you, Adrian.
Well, if we want to suggest changes, would that be better later or before we make a motion? I mean, after we make a motion or before?
Probably make a motion and then make changes and see if the person making the motion and or have a separate vote, I guess. We've been through this once before. So I guess we'd do a motion on this, see if there's a second, any discussion, and then if something comes as a secondary motion, there'll be a second for that and a vote on that.
Can I make a secondary motion on my own motion, though? Maybe not, huh?
I think you can, because you haven't made the motion on this. So let me ask this. Is there anyone who wishes to make a motion on this resolution to start?
Okay, I'll move approval of resolution 180708, urging full federal funding for education.
And I'll second that. Discussion.
Well, I'd kind of like to add the word allegedly in the beginning, whereas Congress and the administration enacted laws intended to foster higher levels of school performance and academic achievement. I've always thought that No Child Left Behind was intended to privatize public school and kind of undermine public school. And even though it's had some positive outcomes, the full measure of the bill where every school is going to fail by 2014 is a negative. It seems negative to me. So, you know, I would rather put Congress and the administration enacted laws allegedly intended to foster higher levels of school performance, because how do we actually know what their intentions were? It may have been stated, or maybe you could say, you know, with the stated intention or whatever, but I'm not sure the laws were intended to foster higher levels of school performance and academic achievement. They may have been intended to privatize public education. So I would like that word in there. It doesn't really say that they're not intended to. It's just allegedly intended to. And down at the bottom, it says, now therefore be it resolved, there's A, B, and C. A says meet the funding levels authorized as part of the No Child Left Behind Act. And B, provide an increase of at least $2.5 billion for Title I and for IDEA for fiscal year 2009. And C, make full funding of mandated public education programs the top priority in adopting the federal budget and fully fund all federal public education programs. I think we could almost just to take over schools. Do we really want, you know, to have that actually happening? If they don't have enough money for this bill and all the schools are failing, you know, are they really going to be able to go around and bust everyone with all of their, you know, consequences, the negative consequences they have lined up for all of us? So I think it's simpler. And you know, $2.5 billion for Title I, I mean, that sounds fine, but it seems like it's all covered just by C, make full funding of mandated public education programs the top priority in adopting the federal budget and fully fund all federal public education programs. I think that's a good statement, and it's inclusive enough. And it also, you know, that whole part about not spending money on the war, this and that, it doesn't have to be spelled out because it's included in that. You know, it's all these other things that we may or may not think are good things for the federal government to spend money on. It sort of covers that just by saying make full funding of mandated public education programs the top priority. And I think it just simplifies it. So I would like to just not put in A and B there, just have C and add the word allegedly, which is not changing it very much.
Well, then those are good ideas. Why don't you specifically state what words you want changed at the beginning and also your deletion of A and B, and then make that as a motion, and then we'll go.
Okay.
We'll go with secondary motion, then we'll go from there.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Adrian, when you were discussing the beginning portion there, allegedly was one proposal you had, and then there was another. There was a different verbiage that you
no, it's
suggested.
Just oh, instead of allegedly,
uh-huh.
Or you could put Congress and the administration enacted laws with the stated intention of fostering higher levels.
With the stated intention. Okay, thank you.
Do you want to go ahead then and read those?
Well, either one of those I think is better than these laws are intended.
But what I was saying is, if you you have to go ahead and decide, and then.
Well, I like allegedly better,
okay.
But.
Then, if there's a second for that, then.
But I'm flexible on this. What do you think, Marilyn?
I prefer with the stated intention.
Well, that's fine with me.
So read that, and then we'll
all
move
right.
forward.
Congress and the administration enacted laws with the stated intention of fostering higher levels of school performance and academic.
Amended motion.
Can I do that since mm-hmm. I seconded the first motion?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, I will second that.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll have a vote on the first motion, which is as written, and we'll see if that passes. No? Tell me. Do the second first, the amended first?
The amendment has to be acted on before you
can
act
on the motion.
Thank you very
much. I appreciate your presence. So let's have a vote first. Is there any other discussion on the amended motion to the main motion? Seeing none, we have a motion on the amended motion by Ms. Dickinson and a second by Ms. Rogers. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
So I think that sounded like 6-1. Okay. So is it correct, Ms. Holmes, that once the amended motion passes?
Yeah, so you have approved language to modify the resolution, and now the original motion is to adopt it as it has been modified.
Okay.
I have a secondary motion, actually.
Okay.
And that is to add on number C. I wonder if the board has an interest in enlarging this to not only mandated public education programs, but something words to the effect of and services to children or direct services to children, because I think there are probably other things that the federal government is underfunding and mandating.
So do you want to read that one more time, the full sentence that you'd like as an amended
Make
motion?
Full funding of public education programs and direct services to children. The top priority in adopting the federal budget and fully fund all federal public education programs.
Okay. We have an amended motion by Mr. Unger. Is there a second? And everything else, I assume, stays the same as the amended motion by Ms. Dickinson.
I'll make the second.
We have a second by Mr. Buckman. Is that correct, though, Mr. Unger? Okay. So, Ms. Holmes, is that clear? Thank you. As long as it's clear with you, I feel better. So we'll take a vote. Any other discussion on the amended motion by Mr. Unger?
Would that be like health care services, and what else do you kind of see in that?
Mental health services, I think.
Do you want to turn your mic on?
I think any services that the federal government has promised to fund for children should be a top priority.
Okay. Any other discussion on the amended motion brought by Mr. Unger and seconded by, Mr. Buckman? Thank you. Seeing no other comments, we'll take a vote on the amended motion brought by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0.
I'm not sure who wrote the motion, wrote the resolution, but I'd like to know if that's $10 billion statewide, nationwide.
That's Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, Kim researched this through the National School Boards Association, I believe, wasn't it, Kim? So I'm sure it's nationally.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? So now that I'm completely lost, we're going to have a vote on the motion. Okay, on the modified resolution as stated. Right. And Ms. Holmes, please take over from me.
Okay, so we have the resolution and Mrs. Roger.
I think so.
Mr. Spadafore.
Yes.
Mr. Millar. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mrs. Dickinson.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes,
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
7-0.
Thank you very much. I almost feel like taking a break right now, but I think I'll keep going.
My question
I would like to ask if it's the board, if the board is comfortable with this, just real quickly, and then Mr. Buckman. But well, can we send this to Congresswoman Capps? Can we send this to both of our female senators, Senator Boxer and Senator Feinstein? Can we send this? Can we send this to the President of the United States? Can we send this to Secretary O'Connell? And can we also send this to Secretary of Education Margaret Spelling, if the board is comfortable? Well, they'll get that. We will. Okay.
And how about the presumptive candidates as well?
And the presumptive candidates who tonight were identified as Senator Obama for the Democratic Party, by the way.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. And is everybody in favor of that? It doesn't have to be a motion. We're good. Everybody's good. Okay, thank you.
I want to amend that motion.
Let's move on to the action discussion section of the agenda. K-12 Visual Performing Art Program update, and I believe Dr. Matakovich, please. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Drum roll, please. Yes. Thank you, President Spadafore. Tonight, we are here to report on the progress of our Visual and Performing Arts Committee. You'll see in the attachment to the board item the list of members of this committee made up of school staff and community partners. We have a few members of the committee here tonight that stayed, and if you would be so kind as to stand, I'd like to recognize you for your work that you've done on the committee, if you would, please. Thank you very much for being on bridging the instructional gap in visual arts, theater, and dance at the elementary level as a top priority. You're aware that we have specialists at the 712 level in the areas, including music, but this was the area that we targeted our work this year. We also received funding from the state, and you have our budget in your packet as well as a reference. But I'd like you to know that teams of teachers and specialists over the course of the summer and through the school year have developed standards-based lessons with the goal to embed them in our core instructional program. We have resource lesson binders at all of the schools, and our teaching artists have been very involved with our classroom teachers over the course of the year. Our teaching artists in the area of visual arts provided 8 standards-based lessons to every K-6 classroom. Our teaching artists presented 8 theater lessons to every K-6 classroom. As well, our K-6 physical education teachers worked with a teaching artist to deliver 4 dance lessons for every class. These teaching artists are experts in their field, and they demonstrated effective strategies. It's our hope that over the course of the next few years, our classroom teachers will be able to integrate these lessons and strategies into their core instructional program. We surveyed all of the elementary teachers who participated, and you have those results as an attachment. And we're very proud to report that the results are very favorable. And about a third of our teachers felt that they were comfortable delivering the lessons on their own without a teaching artist. But more importantly, we have 60% of those responding who need some assistance. And we think with the refined lessons that our teaching artists have put together with the classroom teachers, that over the course of the next year, we would hope to continue with this program. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce our 3 lead teaching artists with classroom teachers to just provide you a brief overview of what they accomplished in the course of this year. I'd like to begin with the area of dance. And Molly McKiernan was our teaching artist. Molly, if you come on forward. John Corvello and Amy Erickson are our physical education teachers, and they would like to just share with you what happened this year in dance.
Want to go first?
It really helped out a lot. We put together 4 standard-based lessons that covered a lot of things. One of the first areas we covered was flexibility. And I always would tell the kids, the dancers have the best flexibility. You guys don't stretch enough. Mm-hmm. Baseball, you want to go out and play and win, and the dancers take their time. And Molly took time to music and taught the kids how to stretch properly. And then a lot of the movements we did with dance. She had warm-up routines, and there's some pictures of the dance going on in our gyms.
Maybe we should turn down the lights just a bit.
Hey, John, what school is this?
This is
Los Ranchos. Okay.
Thank you, Kim. Yeah. Thank you, Kim.
Yes, Los Ranchos.
Yeah. Thank
Los
you.
Ranchos. Yeah. But we put them through, warm-up routines that they worked on all kinds of movements, and it was funny because they correlated to the athletics they were doing.
That's so cool.
And then as they got into it and had fun with it, they really enjoyed it. I really was excited about it. And even at the end, the boys were able to touch in a proper way and have a partner and how to do a line and how to do things. So it was extremely successful for the upper graders and really helped us a lot. Amy had the primary classes, and she'll tell about them.
For the primary grades, we are working on sequencing and just basically learning how to get a rhythm. And Molly's enthusiasm and the way that she intrigued the kids was so perfectly done. She brought out rhythm sticks. She did a lot of different activities that were not, they haven't been experienced before by the younger kids, especially even though I do play some crazy music and do dancing with my kids. This was an opportunity for me to see a variety of ways to teach, which was really, really helpful for further instruction. She really correlated all of her work in accordance with the age group. Perfect for kindergartners, and then as it got up to third graders, they were doing hip-hop, but it really was just different types of movements to rhythm. And 100% participation. They could not wait till she returned, and I was really, really pleased to see that. That's a big deal for third graders. So okay. It was exciting.
Molly?
Okay, well, it was quite an adventure and journey for me, and along with, first of all, I'd love to compliment the 5 PE teachers that I worked with, because their involvement and every first lesson I taught with each grade and each new school, I knew what I was going to expect when I walked in. The who are you and what are you going to make me do? Is this going to be embarrassing? And then by the end, it was really neat just to see, like I said, some of the kids that were shy or some that just a little more timid or, you know, like I said, some of the boys or even children that were heavier set that maybe don't have as much confidence with their bodies, you know, maybe don't do the sports or get as active. By the end, it was like goosebumps on my arms to see these kids walking away feeling good about themselves. So I can't say enough positive things about their program. It allows kids that don't have the opportunity financially, resources with parents, to go, you know, that have the after-school programs. And that's what I do. I've been a dancer my whole life. I was fortunate to have the family that supported me to drop me off at school or after school, you know, pay for the costumes, come see the performances. But to reach this many kids with all these ages is just a really, really special thing. And like I said, it's not just, and I told these kids when I walked in, I'm not trying to make you into a dancer. And I'd joke around. I said, okay, everyone, you bring your tutus. You're going to be ballerinas today. They all chuckled, thought that was so funny. And I said, okay, I'm just joking. But what, yeah. This is Mr. Twinkletoes, by the way. Mr. Twinkletoes. But what I told them is that this can relate to anything. If you're a swimmer or if you like to surfboard, or like a surfer or a skateboard, or if you do sports, that dancing will give you the tools also. So you don't have to expect or want to be a dancer at the end of this program. But if it just gives you a little more confidence with your self-esteem or your flexibility or your musicality, or if it can help you, because the grapevine, which I'm sure you guys probably are familiar with, also in sports, it's called, or with athletics, it's karaoke. So that translated right there for some of the boys that were kind of like, what's this weird move? But then some of them go, oh, I do that when I play soccer, or I do that when I'm warming up for football. So we gave them the translation of it's just not dance, but this expands your body to give you strength and skills and, you know, coordination, agility, all of that to go into other things. But what's nice is that the dance program gives them that artistic expression and release and confidence. My first lesson was hip-hop because I thought that's the best way to break them in. Don't scare them with folk dancing right away and do-si-do and all of that. That's going to be like, whoa, this is a bit much. I'm going to be sick next time PE comes. But so I started with hip-hop. They can relate to that. They had so much fun. And that's so current that it's on TV and in videos and kids go to concerts. So that's something that really kind of broke the ice. And then my partner with the boy, do I have to dance with a boy? And it was nice having the what was it? Because you're my only girl PE teacher. There was other four. So we demonstrated the four PE teachers, and I demonstrated just right away to say, look, this is okay to hook your arm, and we do a little circle or handshake, and just show that that's fine and that's a part of life. And what I used the little handshake is I bent down, I said, hi, nice to meet you, my name is Molly, and they'd shake my hand. I said, that's what you do when you first meet somebody. So that's a part of life right there. So it's not the scary cooties, what are you going to make me do? And then I also put it to current music. I used a song from Madagascar that every time I press play, the kid's like, woo, I love this song. So if they were feeling nervous or a little anxious about the movement, as soon as the song came on, then they started to get a little more comfortable and relatable. And then my fourth lesson was just a celebration of everything that we've learned. And at the very end, I gave them their time to show me what they liked. The boys would break dance. The girls would, you know, dance with each other. And it just overall was, like I said, a long journey, a lot of work, because I did that program, and then I go into my studios in the evening. So my body took a beating throughout the year. I'm going to have to take some longer breaks. You guys know that, in between other teachers. But what I saw from their faces is just priceless. The confidence, the happiness. Were you wanting to jump in, Mary? Okay. Well, I'm going on too much. I'm sorry, but you see how excited I am about it. So that's what I want you guys to understand.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Our lead teacher for visual arts is Deb Spadafore. So Deb, would you mind sharing your experience?
Molly, I expected at least the dance teacher to have some notes. I knew the theater teacher wasn't going to have any, but I'm going to read. Oh, man. Mary's trying to make a public speaker out of me, and it's not working. In 2007, SRI, funded by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, issued an extensive report on the status of arts education in California. The full report is entitled An Unfinished Canvas, and it's available online. And I'm not sure where we were at the beginning of 2007, but today I evaluated the district's arts education program against the findings in that report. At the beginning of 2007, 89% of California schools failed to do this. I'm proud that our board took the lead in developing this plan. It is something that should be highlighted around the state as one more way in which San Luis Coastal Unified School District educates its students so well. Secondly, I'm sure you have some small sense of how directions from a board can set into motion detail after detail of implementation. Part of our successful infrastructure is the administration, and particularly Mary Matakovich, who devoted countless hours, many times in fractious and emotional settings, to transforming your words into actual classroom programs that directly benefited the students in this district. Thirdly, our program is exemplary in that we offered a standards-based course of study in all four arts disciplines. In visual art, every student in the district was provided with 8 hours of standards-based art instruction. Fourthly, schools were provided with all the necessary arts materials needed for that instruction. And finally, the delivery method for that instruction was the same for every elementary school. Using the visual arts standards as our guide, we developed generic lessons for this first year of instruction. These generic lessons delivered the bones of a comprehensive visual art project, including standards to be addressed, vocabulary, anchor artworks that wedded the instruction to a student discussion of significant artworks, assessments, and rubrics. What was missing from these lessons were procedures. These were added during the year uniquely and individually by the artists in residence. As a group, we were testing how different lessons, meeting the same standards, integrated with the curriculum and the needs of the classroom teacher. In the past month, the artists in residence met for long hours, critiquing those individual lessons and selecting those we felt were most successful in terms of meeting standards, curriculum integration, and the use of time. We have just completed writing procedures for all of those lessons. This was a great beginning, and I and my colleagues are looking forward to the next phase of realizing the goal of a fully integrated and sequential arts program. This next phase is to create an environment where the classroom teacher has the training, confidence, and motivation to integrate and embed standards-based arts instruction into classroom learning. This past year in visual art, the role of the real learning. While a painting by Albert Bierstadt might be viewed as a beautiful landscape or even a visual aid to teach foreground, middle ground, and background, most teachers don't understand it as a visual explanation of the entire westward expansion of the United States. For many students who might lose interest in words, looking at that painting provides the visual evidence of a romantic population that pushed westward toward that golden sunset and all that it offered without any knowledge of the hardships that would occur. The work of artist Saul LeWitt might appear to be just another modern art grid, but it embodies complex mathematical concepts of geometry, measurement, and fractions, not only in the way it looks, but the way it was created. Edward Tufte is a scientist who teaches at both Yale and Princeton. In his latest book, Beautiful Evidence, he uses many, many fine art examples. And in his introduction, he explains why by defining the term beautiful evidence. He writes, "Science and art have in common intense seeing, the wide-eyed observing that generates empirical information. Beautiful evidence is about how seeing turns into showing, how empirical observations turn into explanations and evidence. I cannot think of a stronger rationale for teaching visual art in the elementary classroom, nor can I think of another statement that embodies the message I want to pass on to the classroom teacher. As artists in residence working with the classroom teacher, our goals next year will be to provide them with the skills and confidence to teach standards-based art, but most importantly, to show them that a highly effective art lesson about texture can teach about biological structure, fractions, descriptive writing, or community agriculture in an accessible manner that treats both curricular areas with the seriousness they deserve. Every artist in residence has anecdotal stories of students who have benefited from this program. I'd like to share a few very briefly. In one of my kindergarten classes, the students made a rhyming book showing a character who was mad, sad, and glad, while learning about how lines express meaning in art. The ESL students who had been pulled for the first part of the lesson came in and attacked their books with enthusiasm. I was late leaving the classroom that day because every child, including me, just as the Greeks did, creating cohorts and enemies with other hybrid creatures created by their peers. In the end, we had a whole body of literature based on these classroom creatures. Art inspires. Finally, in another sixth grade lesson, students redesigned the American flag, discussing master artworks where artists use the flag to express ideas about race, gender, and peace. When we had our critique at the end of the project, we put all the works on display, and I asked students to select those they wanted to discuss. The first two works that were chosen were by students, they didn't do the choosing. The other students chose to discuss the works that were created by students in the special day class. One had put Japanese writing on the flag, expressing ideas about the contributions of Japanese Americans to our country. The other had created a flag about global warming. A third student, not in the special day class, created a rather normal-looking flag with orange and white stripes. When she explained her idea, the spontaneous oohs and ahs rang through the classroom. She said, "I just read about world hunger and that the color orange makes people hungry. I thought it would be a good idea to create a flag so that when people looked at it and said the Pledge of Allegiance, they would know what it's like to be hungry." art has the capacity to create incredible empathy. As the District Board of Education, you have set us firmly on the right path, but your work, if I may be so bold, is not yet done in the area of arts education. Your final task is to set in motion an assessment and accountability system. The visual arts goals that were before you a while ago need to be assessed or they will become meaningless. An assessment and accountability system will ensure that your arts education legacy continues beyond your terms in office. An assessment and accountability system will signal to principals, teachers, parents, and students that arts are a core subject at San Luis Coastal Unified School District, not only for future artists, but for future citizens who will fully participate in a visual world. Whatever form it takes, assessment and accountability will ensure that arts education is not the curriculum du jour, but one of the educational opportunities offered by this district and one that is offered every year.
In our district, it has just been so exciting to see all of the art happening at all the sites, and it kind of chokes me up a little bit because I'm very passionate about the arts, so thank you. We have had so much fun this year with theater. We started out working with the theater specialist to design lesson plans that fit the standards that were adopted by our district committee, and we spent quite a bit of time working on that, and then we took our artist consultants and re-looked at them and revised them a little bit more, tweaked them. And as we started to deliver them, we found that we were kind of creating our own learning communities, professional learning communities, as theater artists, because we do our first lesson, and then we email the group and say, okay, this is what I did this day, and I would definitely change this part around, and definitely would not do this lesson first, and definitely would use these materials instead. And so we would just keep emailing each other, and so everybody was learning from each other's successes and, I wouldn't say major failures, but, you know, little problems that we found that came up as we went along. And that was so exciting as professionals, because as specialists, we usually are in kind of a vacuum. We don't get to work with other theater people. And so we, throughout the year, I feel like really developed and grew, because we were all using a little bit of each other's lesson plans and tricks. And everybody was so generous. All of the theater artists were so generous about sharing their ideas and things that they know really work. They gave up their lesson plans freely and were supportive of sharing materials and where to get materials. It was really a beautiful team to work with. And as far as teams go, the teachers have embraced this and supported us so well. They're crawling on the floor with us and getting in their levels and doing their warm-ups and really showing the kids that they're willing to take the risk as well. And when the teacher takes the risk and does the acting, the kids are just right there. And we had 100% participation. It was amazing. One of the things that we did that was consistent throughout was teaching the same basic warm-up. We say in theater that you use your voice and your body and your brain all together. And so we all designed the same vocal warm-ups and the same physical warm-ups, and then even some brain exercises like mirror games and things like that that everybody was doing K-6. And so she'd like to share.
Yes, I'm Jean Esselton, and most of you know me as a very long-standing employee of San Luis Coastal. 35 years I'm finishing up this year, and I'm proud to say I have started school every September since 1955 in a school in San Luis Obispo City. Mm. I have a couple things to say. I've been employed this long. You're bound to have opinions about programs that come and go. And when I heard about theater, I thought, oh, goody, another 45 minutes I'm going to have to make up somewhere else. Because in the past, I have not had fabulous experiences with theater coming into my classroom. But Mrs. Slavin and the theater program has completely changed my mind. My students were able to learn through her theater class many things. First of all, I have no other experienced except with Mrs. Slavin, but she is one of those people who can take a group of 20 kids and handle them as well as be fabulous at teaching theater. And those don't always come together in the same person when you have people coming into your classroom. So that was really wonderful. She engaged my special needs children. She engaged my high-level energy children. She engaged my EL students. She engaged me. And oh, yes, I am. And they learned important things with a common vocabulary that I can use in my classroom and that they can hear from me and from Mrs. Slavin. And next year in first grade, they'll hear the same thing. They learned how to focus and have fun and, you know, be energetic and then refocus and be ready to learn again without a lot of redoing by me. That's very valuable in the classroom. She also taught them something called voice level and body level. In class, you might say to your students, okay, now I need everybody to use their quiet voice. But we learned voices in levels, and so I could say to them in the classroom, it's getting too noisy. Would you please put your voice at a level 1? Or, I need to speak with you now. Could you please put your voice at a level 0? And when it was a public speaking opportunity in kindergarten, you share or you talk with the whole class. But I could say, oh, I don't think that's a loud enough level. Could you please move your voice up to a level 5? And then they, you know, instead of being for kids, it's one of the higher level thinking skills. And, you know, they completely got into that and did lots of really good analyzation. I loved having the lesson plans online. That was so valuable, and I just really appreciated that. My kids are already hoping that they get to have it next year. They're asking if Mrs. Slavin's coming back, and they even thought about how maybe next year when they're in first and second grade and they do that play that they always do in first and second grade, maybe they'll get to do it because they've had theater class. So I really think that this has been a valuable program and definitely worthwhile in the funds that you spend on it. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Susie Will. I went to the first VAPA meeting and I thought it was a one-time meeting. Dr. Matakovich kept giving me chocolate and encouraging me to stay, and I needed to tell you all thank you very, very much for this. I'm a kindergarten teacher. I was a PE teacher. I've watched Molly do the dancing. I can't tell you what it's done for the students. And since you focused on elementary school, you have had collaboration because the upper grades are talking with the lower grades. This is what you need to get up to this point where they have the specialists. So I just wanted to say, without VAPA, this is my drama. With VAPA, this is how all of the students feel. And I do want to thank you, Mr. Millar. You sat in a lot of those meetings. Mr. Buckman, you sat in a lot of those meetings, and you told us how important it was to you. I wish you could see my little kindergarten student that doesn't talk. She doesn't talk. Well, in dance, she moves. I thought, if we could do this, this is what we're trying to do. Get her in her field where her gift is, and now she's ready to learn. So you have addressed all of those students who maybe aren't the math and maybe aren't the reading, but they're the gifted in art and music and drama, and it's made a wonderful difference. So I wanted to thank all of you. Dr. Matakovich, thank you.
To see the teamwork that's gone on between the teaching artists and the classroom teachers, as just you can see from the enthusiasm, it's been incredible. And this has been really our awareness knowledge year to kind of get our feet on the ground. And it's our hope that we can continue with this along high schools in the coming year. However, we have a commitment from the music staff to revisit this area, because we feel that this is an area that we could develop. Yes?
I had a question about that one.
Yeah.
Was there any talk about having the strings program at middle school or elementary level, since it didn't fly at high school?
Well, that's part of the discussion right now. We offered it thinking that the upper grade, the high school level student would be interested in that. But there is talk of the middle school level as well. So we need to get our music staff together and look at the program overall. Just another area that we focused on is the goal to advocate for the arts in our schools. And we are interested in creating public awareness for what goes on in our schools. We've got several suggestions and are formalizing a plan that we hope to share with school staffs. We've got a lot of art going on in our schools, and we just want to advertise it. So you'll be hearing more about that in the future. We also have been interested in developing a multi-year plan, and actually this Thursday we are having a guest speaker from the California Arts Alliance, Louise Music. She works in Alameda County, and she'll be here for a meeting with the community to talk about how to develop a model visual and performing arts plan. She'll be here Thursday the 5th in this room from 3:45 to 4:45. And this has been sponsored with the Central Coast Center for the Arts as well as the San Luis Arts Center. So we hope to enjoy the benefit of her work and her achievements in Alameda County, and hope to bring to accomplish a goal with this committee in terms of developing a plan for us as well. So that's in a nutshell, and we're here to receive your input on the program.
Yeah. Thank you, Doctor. Chris?
Yeah, just I have a question on the continuum grids that were passed out. You have three basic areas: foundation building and best practices. Could you describe those to me a little bit and what the meaning is behind each of those terms?
Sure. Last year, we spent the bulk of last year kind of analyzing what was going on in our schools. And what you have in front of you, it's basically a needs assessment, but it was driven by querying all of our schools, our principals, and staff relative to what was taking place in each of these areas: standards-based curriculum, instruction, student assessment, professional development. So
we would like to achieve our best practices by someone's definition. Mm-hmm. So looking at this, recognizing that it was about a year ago, it looks like we've come some way, but we have a long way to go.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mark?
Chairman, having started to actually participate in this before I was lucky enough to get elected to the board and to continue to participate, there were times that I saw this committee struggle, fight to maintain community input and maintain a relationship with the artists in the community. And that struggle and the success of making that happen, I think, is part of why this is so successful and why it's going to continue to be successful. And the district's continuing to reach out to the community and the artists in the community is going to pay off. It's just going to keep paying off for the children.
Okay. Adrian?
Well, I love art in the schools, and I'm really happy to hear the reports. I thought they were totally exciting, and congratulations to everybody involved in that. I'd still like to see instrumental music in the elementary level during the school day, but I think you made a convincing case that one of the reasons I hear we can't have instrumental music in elementary is because we don't really have time for that. There's so much reading, and just, if I remember right, one of those reasons, principals didn't want to have more time for instrumental music during the school day. But I think that you all made a strong case that not only is art fun and theater fun and dance fun for its own sake, but it has so many multiple ways that it encourages brain development and social skills and understanding ensemble and everything that has to do with learning and being a total human being is in the arts. So it's time well spent, and it affects every other aspect of curriculum, actually. And I think you all made a really good case for that.
Marilyn?
Thank you. I was wondering, Dr. Matakovich, if you're aware, could you explain a little bit about how,
in residence there, it was just
That's correct.
Staff supplied it.
Yeah, what we did, if you'll remember, in terms of distributing the funds, we requested a priority list from all of our schools from each of these areas and asked the teachers and the principals to give us a list of what needed to be funded, and actually that was K-12. So what you see here is how we distributed the money based on the request. So the request that came from Pacific Beach was met.
Okay, thank you.
Can I just add that Dan Kirk, one of the faculty members, is a very accomplished actor and musician. And who's the artist? I can't.
Mrs. Jacobson.
Terry Jacobson. Very good too. Mm-hmm. So they have a unique situation where they have the art talent in house. And they do a lot with very little funding for those kids.
Thank you.
Got you done. Dr. Matakovich, the funding for next year is set out on 6.12?
That's correct. We're looking at receiving our allocation, our entitlement of about $113,000 approximately.
Okay. And then in relationship to budgeting, which is always an issue that comes up before the board, obviously, every year. There was a statement on paragraph 3 on page 6.2 that says the VAPA committee has been interested in developing a multi-year plan for the visual and performing arts. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about interested and what that looks like?
Well, we have some some samples of plans, but they're primarily based on this continuum grid that we've used, and what we're looking for a process that would be inclusive of our community as well as our school staff, and we would see that we would be developing action plans that would target goals that would move our program forward.
Okay, and then the other question I had was, and this is more of a philosophical question. Budget is always an issue, and we don't know exactly the availability of some of these funds year in and year out. In terms of the multi-year plan, will there also be funding models developed so the board can consider what funding issues or options may be available to continue this plan forward with fully integrated and sequential visual and performing arts?
Well, it shouldn't, but and also uses the resources that we have available to us. So at this time, we're not prepared to request any assistance, but just to allow us to continue our work as a committee to make recommendations.
Okay, yeah, the reason I ask that is twofold. I know that there are going to be new teachers coming into the district, and part of this direction and the strategic plan is for integration with the teaching staff at the K-6 directly. Mm-hmm. So we have that process now that's happening with the teachers that are in place. We're going to have new teachers brought in terms of long-term planning. How's that continued integration, you know, being visualized or being discussed with the new staff, with the existing staff? And also, the reason I bring this up is because in the past, funding for visual and performing arts has come and gone, as everyone knows much better than I do. And without integrating it at some point, it could be lost again. So in terms of a long-range plan, at least I believe that may make a goal out there for teachers to see developing in a way that they know putting their time into this process won't be a one-year, a two-year, a three-year thing, and then it'll be over with. So I was just asking about that continuing vision in terms of how we are going to integrate the staffing, the integration into the classroom, and then the funding issues that will always come up with this.
No, I think that the model that Dr. Matakovich has developed and the community group and the staff group that's put this together has had sort of two directions. Number one is the direction of the consultant artist who comes in, but number two is to develop some kind of way to sustain that beyond the consultant artist, leaving standards-based lessons, leaving lessons online, leaving lessons in other format, and having a cadre of teachers who have been participants and observers in the program. I think those are things that build sustainability over time. The issue of continued funding, I mean, we're grateful for the fact that we believe there will be continued funding for the arts, at least in the short term.
But the strategic planning process has a number of goals, and certainly if we get to a place where a particular goal is in jeopardy, it wouldn't disappear without some kind of action taken that says, okay, in the priority of things that we wish to fund, these are the things that we will fund and these that we won't, but art will be included in the menu of things to consider.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I think the thank you to Dr. Matakovich for the leadership also, and the thank you for the community.
So,
yeah,
thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for that presentation. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much, everybody who presented and came tonight, and Dr. Matakovich, thank you. Next, we have the approval and updated local educational agency, LEA, plan and addendum. Ms. Dalkiskamp.
At the November 6, 2007 board meeting, Dr. Matakovich provided an overview of our district's local educational agency plan, and we'll just call that the LEA plan for short from here on. In preparation for tonight's board meeting, I just wanted to acknowledge that staff members from our educational services, instructional services, and student services departments all contributed to the review of this and revision of our LEA plan, and I just wanted to thank everyone who helped us out this year. Vicki Worley, our teacher on special assignment for the English Learners Program, is here tonight, and she's going to help me as we flip through these overheads. But I just wanted to point out that with the board packet and also on our district website, you had the complete LEA plan, which is about 144 pages. And then part of that was the LEA plan addendum. And then you had about another 88 pages of the EL master plan, so over 200 pages. But also today, I set at your places some other documents that I think would be helpful to you and to the members of the public who may want to, if they so choose, pick up packets that I put at the back of the room that will also help them to follow along. So part of the challenge here is to take that 200 and some pages of document and provide you with an overview. So what we'll do is we'll present these slides, and then I'll request any input, feedback, questions from you, and then request, of course, approval of this plan. So to begin, I wanted to provide a brief overview of our LEA plan. It is a comprehensive, multi-year, district-wide plan. And as you see there, the content includes information about state and federal programs, our district profile, a needs assess right there, 1 through 5. These are goals that are developed by the state and provided in a template that we then use to develop our LEA plan. And at the very bottom of that statement, what I have there is that the LEA plan and the addendum provide a foundation on which each school's single plan for student achievement is based. So that's the connection to goals set up at each of our schools. Okay. I just briefly listed for you the revisions that we made to the comprehensive part of the plan, the 144 pages. The first one is that we updated the information as indicated on the LEA plan template. So the beginning part of the document has many things removed and other information put in its place, and that all comes to us from the direction from the state. We also updated all the state and federal program information to indicate which state and federal programs we do have in place this year, 07-08. We also updated any student achievement results or goals that are included in the plan, along with the results of the California Healthy Kids Survey that was presented at the last meeting. We looked at our staffing needs, and we updated those needs. Tonight also you had another update that had to do with our strategic plan goals, so we removed what was in there before and updated that section. We also made reference between the LEA plan and the LEA plan addendum. LEA plan goal number 2 focuses in on English learners, and our LEA plan addendum has a big focus on English learners too. And then finally, what we did was we updated goal 2 so that it would align with our master plan for English learners program. Now, what the main part of the presentation is to let you know about what the main areas of our LEA plan addendum. And just to explain that, every school district has an LEA plan. Because of our program improvement status, we are required to update our LEA plan. But the state actually did something that was very good in that they said, you know, it's in the green and the blue, identify the main focus areas of our LEA plan addendum. Parent involvement, professional development, and student support. And I will come back to these and provide more explanation. But something else that's important about this summary is that I just want you to notice that we have incorporated the ideas that came out of the EL study session. Principals also talked about our plans for the EL program, and they provided input, and so I put it under those categories. In addition, on the second page, our superintendent developed some objectives, which he has shared, and so we also aligned those to those three focus areas. And then you, as a board, when we had our EL study session follow-up questions, you presented these questions and we aligned them there. And I share that with you because we just need to acknowledge that ideas for how to improve our programs come from many different members of our school community, and we value that. And so what this document can allow us to do is, and you know, we can share this with all our staff, we can, and what it allows us to do is see the focus areas, but also allows us with the ideas of others to enhance our plans. So the idea here is to focus on the main three areas, and I'll go into a little more detail on those, but as we work through them and see our next steps, we want to refer to the other ideas presented and to the more comprehensive LEA plan to keep moving forward. Now you notice some color coding. This is the first page of the LEA plan addendum. Okay, it was part of the board packet, but what I did here was to take that plan and to color code it so that as you are looking through it, you can say, oh, green, okay, this has to do with professional development. And if you go to the next page, please, Vicki. You can see, you know, some areas that have the tan and some that have the blue, just to help us all be able to focus on the ideas that are there. And of course, I can never miss an opportunity in special education. And both of those items are there because our district is in program improvement, because our English learners aren't achieving at the levels that we need them to. But we also had our special education students didn't meet the participation rate in English language arts, and so that also is a criteria we didn't meet. So I asked Jackie Kirk-Martinez to work with me on how we could include this in our plan. So for English learners, as far as parent involvement, we want to provide and expand the classes we offer from the Latino Family Literacy Project, which does two things. Helps parents to learn English and helps parents to help their students acquire literacy skills. We also want to provide ELAC and DLAC training to our staff, but also to our parents so that they have the tools they need to be involved in effectively in our schools. And then, of course, we have a mirage of site parent education activities. As far as special education goes, you can see there we want to provide parent education regarding assessments, assessment participation and results, and in addition, newsletters and resource information regarding student progress. So these are the main points under the LEA plan addendum for parent involvement. The next one is, yes.
Isn't part of the reason that we have to have special education participation as a deficit area because when students use the modifications on their IEPs for something like the high school exit exam, it docks us on AYP. So there's a conflict between IDEA and NCLB regarding what participation means for students with IEPs. So it doesn't mean they're not participating. It just means they're participating according to their IEPs, which No Child Left Behind doesn't allow, which is odd.
That's correct. But we're hoping with this new California modified assessment that that will help our students. Some will be able to take that assessment instead of the regular assessment with modifications. But you're right, there is that issue there. That kind of works against each other. Okay, as far as professional development for the English Learners Program for this next year, what we'd like to do is work with our K-6 staff members in grade strategies into their standards-based lessons. For all of our teachers, grades K-12, we want to train them in the use of content and language objectives. It's related to a research-based program. Where a teacher can take a standard and divide that standard into an objective of the content they want the students to learn and then the language that they want them to use as they are learning this content. And so what it does is it creates a focus in a classroom where teachers begin to think, okay, how can I get my students to interact using language so that our English learners can develop their language skills, but also all of our students. This is something that benefits every student in the classroom. We also have CTEL preparation classes that we're going to offer. CTEL stands for California Teachers of English Learners. It is the new CLAD. Okay. And we have four staff members in our district who have been trained to offer these classes. Vicki Worley, Kathy Ahern, who is an EL and English teacher at Laguna Middle School, Jeff Liebrick, who's an ELD teacher at San Luis Obispo High School, and me. And so what we want to do is we want to offer these classes to our staff members who don't currently have their EL authorization, okay? And then the goal is for them to then go take the test. So we're going to offer two series this coming year, and we're going to start off by concentrating on those core content area teachers who don't have those.
Yeah, Chris. And is this one of the ways that we're going to address the 30, I believe it was, what, 34% of our secondary teachers who are SADAI trained?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Thank you.
Also, we want to provide professional development for our support staff and our paraprofessionals. In other words, our counselors and our secretaries and our registrars and our instructional aides, because we talked about how it's the whole school that needs to be able to welcome English learner families and to help increase that participation and to have a full understanding of what our procedures are so that they can help them and we can place students where they need to be and provide support as needed. Oral education teachers, and then also some differentiated instruction training for general education and special education teachers. And finally, our last focus area is student support. And so for English learners, we want to be able to monitor the progress of the English learners, and that means many different things. It means being able to compile results of tests, but it also means developing formative and summative assessments that we can use to monitor the progress, and then being able to use that information, we can make sure that we have interventions within the day and outside the school day to support students, and that that's based on data. And then, of course, summer school is very important, especially for students learning English, that you don't take off in the summer and not get to practice your English. So summer school is very important for us, and there are classes offered for our English learners during summer school. And then, of course, special education, as far away as we can, and really looking at the whole child, see if we can increase the participation of our students there. So in summary, my goal is that we'll be able to say, well, we're going to address it with parent involvement, professional development, and student support. And if we can have those three key areas in our minds, then anything else we need to look up, we can go to a document. But if we can have everyone's focus on that, I think we will see some improvements. So at this time, I'll take any questions or input from you.
Chris?
Yeah, first I just want to thank you for doing this. I only wish I had had it this weekend. It was very interesting going through this. It was a lot to read. I had originally written a lot of questions for you, but I guess ultimately it boils down to this is the document that we'll be basing, hopefully, our ascent out of the program improvement on. How much different... How much difference are we seeing here in the revised document as opposed to what we had in the original document, and recognizing that the bar is going to be continuing to go higher? My fundamental question is this...
And what are you going to do differently? Okay, so if you look at the second paragraph under English Learners Program, it says, although the previous LEA plan addendum included efforts to improve EL achievement through increased direct services, so I believe some of it had to do with more EL specialists coming into the elementary program, adding some sections of ELD at the secondary. Additional professional development, and yes, there was front loading and so forth, and extended day opportunities. Okay, we didn't achieve our targets. We are providing professional development still, but it's going to be very targeted. And the goal here is to monitor it, because we can offer the training, but unless we are, and I mean by monitoring collectively, principals, teachers, making sure that we are providing the basic services, the professional development won't necessarily be effective.
And one of the things, if I may, that really jumped out at me too, I believe it was in this document, was the incredible responsibility that's being placed on principals to achieve this—is it the single site plan or the school site plans?
Mm-hmm.
So we're supporting principals, as I gather from this document, because it really looks to me like they're the ones that are on the line for this.
Well, they're part of the solution. They're working with us. We're trying to provide support for their teachers and for them, so that they can also communicate a focus and support that focus at their sites.
Chris, do you have more? Adrian?
I do want to
turn your mic back.
Sorry. As best as we can, I think, get this document out here, or get even perhaps something even more distilled to the teachers and to the population, translated into Spanish. I would appreciate that. I think that this is a key issue, and it is a key initiative that we as a school district have to move on, and the more that we can make our constituents aware of it, I think the better that's going to be for what we need to do to move forward. Thank you.
And that summary document is being translated, and we'll be sharing it with the DLAC parents tomorrow night.
Okay. Adrian?
I have a somewhat different take on what we want to do for our district to improve in the ways we want to, and I think ever-increasing success is a good goal, but to to put a lot of mental pressure on ourselves that we have to now go to X percent, and then other, you know, it's unrealistic and not helpful. So it goes with this. There's too much emphasis on standardized test results and a bill that's poorly constructed. So I would like us to let go of that. We're going to have to deal with it, and we will. But that's not what's driving us. It's not. I think we can set our own standards and our own goals and feel good about the progress that we're making, and I think it will actually be more effective. And it will just feel better about what we're doing if we lower the stress level. I think good administration lowers the stress level while increasing the expectations. And if you can do that, you're a good administrator. I say that to all administrators. Everyone feels happier, and they're calmer, and they're doing better. So let's just let go. I would like to see us let go of that part of it.
And I'd like to share, I think
I'm sorry, Adrian, but I've got a problem with your painting me as supporting complete standardized testing. What I'm supporting here is the education of English learners. This is what we've been given. This is what we get $2 million from the federal government for. We can choose not to take that money, but my interest is in making sure that our English learners are learning, and I think that's the interest that we heard from our English learners and from their parents and from the teachers. I do support what we need to do to make sure that kids are learning, and I believe that we need to be able to monitor that so that we can assure ourselves and we can assure those people that we're doing the right thing for their kids.
I don't disagree with one single thing that you just said.
Thank you.
And I think Ms. Dalkeskamp was going to add something to that conversation.
Yes, I think both points are very valid here. What I would say about AMA 01, which has to do with annual progress, I think that's a realistic goal. Our students should be able to make annual progress. AMA 02, that has to do with students reaching proficiency, I think that's a realistic goal also. Also included, and I didn't share it up there, though I guess we could, these annual SELT results and us looking at how did our students do in 06-07 and how did they do in 07-08. And these are overall results. We can dig deeper. We can look at how did they do in just the listening part. Okay, are they making progress there? How about the reading domain? How about the speaking domain? How about the writing domain? Those are all domains in the SELT test, which is the California English Language Development Test. And so those can become parts of our goals too, not just the federal ones.
And Mr. Millar?
Rita, I noticed in all three of the AMAOs that in the 06-07 year, all the targets decreased. Is that something unique to the cohort, or did something change?
We brought this up at the EL study session. The SELT exam changed in 06-07, and so they had to revise the targets.
And Mark?
Chairman John, thank you. On page 19 of the original document that was in our packet, it's probably just something I don't understand, but it's staffing patterns for the district programs serving EL students. And as I look at this, pretty much across the board, we're saying that we have a need. And so is that administration's saying that this was what would be best for the program? Is that what that need is?
Well, we have a need as far as teachers who are authorized to instruct English learners. And we have some needs at the elementary, but as you can see, the majority are at the secondary, as was referred to earlier.
And as I go across, obviously in some areas the supply is very low, which is a little distressing. And I don't know if that's unique to our area or to the state. ELD teachers?
Well, And ELD teachers would be, you know, for EL, some of the wording on there relates to the R30 that we fill out, the annual census, and this is the way they divide up these categories. So one of the categories is ELD and SADAI.
Right.
We want our elementary.
Rick's shaking his head in the back, so one of the ones that's most scary to me is primary language teachers. And it's showing, what I'm gathering from this, and I could be wrong, is we don't have a single primary language teacher in the district?
No, we do at Pacheco Elementary School.
Okay, so.
We just don't, we have enough there to meet the need.
Okay.
Even though I know that Mr. Mayfield, the principal there, is one of his goals is to even hire more.
Okay, and is that also a goal of the district in of itself?
Well, that could be something to consider. Right now, with the current program that we have, we don't have that BCLAD need at the other levels or at the other schools. But if that was an area that we wanted to explore further, where we are providing, for example, math, science, or social science in the student's native language, then we would need more teachers with that authorization.
Are the people that are going to judge us as coming out of program improvement, would it help in A, help the students, and B, help in terms of this report if in future reports we have more primary language teachers?
I don't know that that's going to matter as much. That SADAI column you talked about with the 95, that will help us greatly.
Thank you for your help.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, the only thing I would put in, the notion of primary language instruction, is, which is what happens at Pacheco, you literally need a state waiver in order to do it. The legislature, or actually the voters, I suppose, passed a resolution that basically prescribed that instruction would occur in English. The requirement that teachers be prepared to teach students who speak a language other than English is a very high priority. That they speak a particular language is really not specified.
Adrian?
Aren't the newest credentials, don't they include this training? So anybody we hire with a new credential, and whatever type of new credential it is, it's going to be set. It's include what we used to call CLAD, and now it's CTEL. What are those
actually,
initials?
It's, so CTEL, yes, CTEL.
That's not the same as CLAD? Cross kind of nice on the new credentials. Is there some kind of a requirement that everyone has to be CLAD certified, like by 1 year from, like next by next, the end of this year, isn't it? Or when is that?
Well, it's always, I mean, the current law says anybody who is instructing an English learner must have an EL authorization. Not by any particular time.
Oh, just by now. Yeah, okay. All right.
Dr. Vellon, you've got that. Fine. Questions? You know, Rita, I was just going to say, I thought that the information and the breadth of the program and the identification of the areas and the how you address them was unbelievable in the sense that what I learned up in San Jose for 3 days from Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas and California schools was that it's an ongoing process. It's multifaceted. You identify a lot of areas, but no matter what happens with No Child Left Behind, which is a political structure, which may be here a year more but be gone, I think the commitment shown in your response, the district's response, the administrative response, the teacher response, the site response to these issues is the core of what's happening. No Child Left Behind will not be here in 5 years, but the district's commitment is set forth in this LEA and the supplement and everything that's being developed through all the efforts that you mentioned. I think that's the critical part of this, which is very, very clear. I just wanted to commend you and everyone else who's been working on this, which takes a lot of people, because I think that's what the district is all about. It doesn't matter if there is a No Child Left Behind. There are children in our district that you'll do everything you can to help. And that's what this is for, and the parents also, and the other issues that are connected, which is, I couldn't believe what I heard up in San Jose about the kind of issues that are faced. So I thought that was the thing that really stood out in terms of how this was presented. So thank you.
Thank you.
Adrian?
I just wanted to say that's kind of what I was trying to get at, that we have our own goals, and we don't need to worry that much about the federal part, which adds extra stress, I think. But just, it is clear, like you say, that we have our own goals, and that we take ownership of it.
Except the $2 million that Chris mentions is nice to have.
Well, yes.
John, I'd like to make a motion.
Sure, Mark. Sure.
I'd like to follow the recommendation that the Board of Education approve the district's updated LEA plan and its addendum.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman. Is there a second? We have a second by Ms. Dickinson. Any further of fiscal services? And she'll do the basic presentation tonight. And Julie was supported by both Judy Jones and Sandy Carrico, and our fiscal analysts, in order to build this budget. And there was direct support from payroll, accounts payable, and especially recognized efforts of Sharon Bloom, secretary for the department, in putting together your binders here tonight. It was a team effort, excellent effort, and I think it's a really nice product. And with that, I'll turn it over to Julie, and we'll do a little tag team stuff for you guys tonight, and Julie will lead off.
Good evening.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much to everyone in fiscal, and especially Sharon and Judy, who put this all together in a very short amount of time, and I think they did a great job on it. Tonight, we're presenting the proposed budget for the 2008-2009 year and the estimated actuals for 2007-2008. I think you've all received your binder. It looks like this. It should be similar to the binder you got last year, if you were here last year. It's broken down into several sections. The first section includes your budget message, the budget summary that you should be familiar with. I'm going to go over the budget assumptions with you. There's some graphs in here that give you a historical perspective on where the district is now compared to where it has been financially. And, of course, everyone's favorite is the SACS document. You love looking at that. Following that are the school site budgets and the staffing information for all the school sites. And then we have the categorical program budgets and the educational support services budgets. I'd like to start by talking about the assumptions that we used in building this budget so you know where some of these numbers came from. As you are well aware, the enrollment for the district has been declining over the past 8 years or so. We expect the enrollment in October 2008 to be at 6,768 students. That's compared to the enrollment last year of 7,000. So that's down about 232 students, which is about what it's been happening over the last few years. Due to the declining enrollment, we are not replacing three certificated full-time equivalent teachers, and that's reflected in this budget. Other staffing ratios are going to remain consistent with where they have been. The district is continuing to support the K-3 class size reduction and ninth grade class size reduction. General fund expenditures is at $2,237,000, and we expect special ed to need a contribution of about $3,217,000. All of these total unrestricted contribution to these restricted programs of about $7,673,000. That's up a little bit compared to last year, mainly due to the fact that a lot of these programs are not being funded at the levels they were last year. Our revenue assumptions include a 2% increase to our property taxes, and I think Russell had some information you wanted to share on that.
I just want to emphasize that when we create a budget, we create a budget with a lot of estimates attached to it and best guesses at the time. And within our budget, We have estimates that are based upon information that might be a week old or might be a month old, but ultimately the state has great power over us in terms of what they're going to fund and how much they're going to fund. And then we confront our revenue situation. And our revenue situation as a basic aid district is predicated on property taxes. And it is a really positive aspect of our district that we're funded by local property taxes. However, it creates a bit of consternation when we're forced to create a budget in June
on numbers that won't be known until August, August 15th to be exact. When we created the budget, we looked at the aspects of the declining housing market and what the impact might be on us. And we did what we thought was a conservative estimate of making a 2% allocation. On, let's see, Monday of this week, I called up the county auditor's office and spoke with the analyst who's in charge of local property taxes. And she told me that on Friday, the county assessor's office and the county auditor's office had gotten together. And they discussed the local situation within San Luis Obispo County. And particularly what they were focused on was the Prop 8 requests for reassessment of property value based upon it going down in relation to what it was valued at. The point here is that there's a proposition on the books that allows for a homeowner to request a reassessment of their home if they believe its value has declined below its assessed value that its property taxes are based on. And sometimes, and in this case it's happened, a county assessor will give out blanket itself a significant number measured against the total property value within the county. It just is a number for your information which shows that the property declines in two significant areas. Napomo and Paso Robles have taken on large numbers. Within the city of San Luis Obispo, the requests for reassessments aren't nearly that significant. So we await some sort of information about that. As a result of the conference between the two offices, their original thinking going into the meeting was that property values, probably the assessed valuation on property tax basis, would go up by about 5%. They came out of the meeting believing that it was going to be closer to 4%, sharing information back and forth that were germane and, to their own particular offices and departments. They were able to share the information to the extent now what they're thinking is a 4% countywide increase in property tax valuation. What it's going to translate to us as a school district is unknown until about August 15th. The reason is we have some number of special assessment districts within our boundaries that they haven't done the particular calculation for. Whether or not we're going to get a 2% increase or a 4% increase or whatever that number becomes won't be known until August 15th. At that time, we will bring you back the correct revenue numbers. But for the purposes of your budget, it's at 2%, but I wanted you to know what the latest information was.
We have a question, Chris.
So one figure that I saw bandied about was about 6.6%. So that's not accurate. We just won't know until August 15th, right?
That's not an accurate number for 2008, 2009.
Thank you.
Okay. Our federal revenues, we budgeted with no change from last year. You'll see a bit of a difference, but that's because the carryovers haven't been budgeted in yet. As you know, state revenues have been deficited at 6.5%. All categoricals have also been adjusted due to the declining enrollment, because many categoricals are based on either enrollment or attendance for their funding. Many of the local revenues that we receive have not been budgeted yet, so that's going to look like it's less in the budget year than it is the ones that we're not budgeting for. Classified salaries are also a little bit lower in the budget. That's due to categorical positions that have not yet been budgeted. That'll probably go up when we report to you again at first interim after we have the carryovers in and the information from the school sites on how they want to budget that money. A couple of other things to let you know about. Health and welfare is up 8%. The other statutory benefits have been adjusted based on the current rates. Our workman's comp has gone down for the third consecutive year, which is good news. Books and supplies will be re-budgeted after the carryovers are in, and that will probably increase again at first interim also. Utilities, we budgeted at a 5% increase, and fuel at a 15% increase. And we also have a 5% in there for economic uncertainties.
from our ending fund. If you look at the end of the budget assumption section, you'll see information on the other funds, which include projections on revenues and expenditures that we know of today and how we believe the funds will end the year. A couple of things that I wanted to mention is that the adult ed fund was also affected by the 6.5% reduction to categorical, so that's down a little bit, and that's in the budget. The state is not planning on funding deferred revenues for next year, but the district will continue to make its match of $300,000 to the deferred revenue fund. And we've also budgeted $1 million to transfer to Fund 20 for the liability for other post-retirement benefits. You'll see that in your budget. And the general fund summary that you're familiar with, which is the spreadsheet, has been updated based on the most current information. You'll see a little bit of a difference there from the last time that Russell presented this to you. The restricted ending balances have been adjusted based on information we know as of May 22nd, and that will certainly change by the end of the year after we see what our ending balances will be. And I think Russell wants to talk to you a little bit more about strategic planning items.
One more item that we need to make sure that the board has a firm grip on is the strategic planning expenditures that we've been making on a historical basis. We have one-time money and we have ongoing money. And the ongoing, well, both the one-time and the ongoing have been budgeted in the 08-09 budget on a status quo basis. So we're just rolling forward with the same dollars at this particular time and allocating them as we had in the 07-08 school year. We do have one suggestion with the board's approval that we want to change the status of, and that's the Pacheco support allocation. In this particular budget, in the 07-08 year, we put down $175,000 for support of Pacheco. We don't really need that much money. We're budgeting $150,000 in 08-09, and our proposal to the board would be to convert that from, and so that would be our suggestion to the board that should they accept this budget, they also accept the idea that the conversion from one time to ongoing for Pacheco support. The other allocation that's listed on your in your board book for the superintendent's recommendations is the last item in the strategic planning list, and that's the 0.5 BITSA coordinator. We're currently putting that as a 0.5 FTE because we only have enough first, or, and actually it's second-year teachers to fill a 0.5 FTE. But as we bring back teachers and as we hire teachers for positions that are currently being held open, we certainly are going to end up with first and second year teachers that are going to need the bits of support. We will probably have that in a first interim or in a budget revision coming up in August as a full-time position. So we want to alert you to that idea. There's no action or request at this moment except to tell you that's something that we recognize as being almost certainly going to change on the basis of new hires. We talked about the reserve for uncertainty being a 5% of expenditures, and you have the information on the other funds. I think at this time we'd be happy to take any questions that you may have come up with in your research of the information.
Thank you, Julie and Russell. And questions from the board? Boy, such a...
Seeing none.
Well, here we go. No, you waited too long. Mr. Okay. Buckman.
Yeah, we'll figure on Mr. Buckman for one anyway.
Sorry. Which one do you want?
Just one.
Just one.
You pick.
Just one. First of all, congratulations on the workers' comp. That's just, it's amazing in this day and age.
You know what's happened is since Mr. Spadafore joined the board, the workers' comp costs have gone down. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's all the extra hours I haven't been able to spend out in the field.
He's not on the personnel commission anymore, so it's worked out. One of the questions I had, and this is probably a waste of my one question, on the adult ed fund, on Fund 11, mm-hmm. I'm confused. I'm also not very good at math. How the projected this fund will end the year with the same or very close to the ending balance as it started as the beginning balance, and on many of the funds, they appear to be start with a certain amount and almost end with exactly the same amount? Are these expect? I would expect $2 million to come in, and there to be nothing left at the end because we've expended it. What I'm seeing, what it looks like to me is that $2 million is coming in, and you're ending up with an ending balance of close to $2 million. And maybe I'm reading that incorrectly.
Well, let me look. I think what you find those. Yeah, is the reserves piece on that.
There's each of the funds have their own reserve.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That would explain that. So then I get another free question.
Okay.
I'll leave it alone.
You sure?
If you look at your financial summary, I know these pages are awful to look at.
I'll come into the office.
Yeah,
I'll,
that's fine.
I'll take budget one.
Anytime. Absolutely.
Chris and then Adrian, please.
Yeah, you should have asked her more questions with your first question, Mark. I'm glad that our budget seems solid. When we read about districts like Atascadero having to cut over $1 million out of their budget because of declining enrollment and the cuts in the state budget, I think we're in better shape than most people are. I would point out for the public that we have had financial problems in the past. The year 2000, when Mr. Millar and I were first on the board, and we had to cut $10 million out of the budget in 2 years. And so, I'm glad we are where we are. I will support the ongoing funding for Pacheco. I think it's important for us to support Pacheco. I think it's a really key element of both learning for our Spanish-speaking kids and also for our English-speaking kids. And the 5% reserve, I think we absolutely have to keep the 5% reserve. And so, and I'm glad to see that we're also putting $1 million into the Fund 20, because I think the Fund 20 is really important to us as well. So thank you guys, and thanks for all your hard work.
In further explanation of that particular move, we have our, this is for the public as much as the board, but we have our unfunded liability for benefits for retirees, the actuarially determined amount, and it'll fluctuate as we determine the actual retirees from our workforce. But it's over $11 million, and we've been fortunate to be able to cover $4.5 million so far, and we continue to work very aggressively to finish covering that unfunded liability so it's not hanging over either the organization's head, the board's responsibility, or it doesn't represent an uncertainty to our employees about whether or not there's. I think I'm way off on that already. Okay. So you'll see some changes coming back for our diesel and gas fuel, too.
Adrian?
I want to echo what Mr. Unger said about being glad that we're not losing programs, and you know that's a real relief. And hearing about our wonderful arts programs and knowing we're going to have those next year, you know, that's really exciting. One quick comment to Mr. Buckman about the workers' comp. You know, there's another side to that story, though. The reason costs may go down because we have better safety education and employees are not getting hurt, and because I know that's an ongoing thing in school districts. But there's the other side of when people do get hurt and they're not being provided services. That, having been a person who got hurt in our district, tripping over that cord, the services were pretty bad through Broadspire. They just, you know, well, I'm sorry, you can't have that, and no, we don't provide that, and that's all you get, and you know, so that's what's been happening with workers' comp and why it's cheaper. So the downside is the benefit isn't as good for people who really need some care, and that's why it's cheaper. So there's always different ways of looking at a picture. But from the budget side, of course, you know, that's good.
I would like to add a little bit, with all due respect to Ms. Dixon, that we're covering our workers' comp liabilities each and every time in each and every case. And if we weren't, we would be held accountable for that. The aspect of your experience, I recognize that you weren't satisfied with what you were given and what came your way. But the actual performance of benefits being handed out and and our liabilities being covered, I feel we do an absolutely excellent job in taking care of our injured workers. So I just don't want the impression to be left that we are trying to save a penny at the expense of our employees, because that's truly not the issue.
No, and I'm glad you pointed this out, because it's not the district I'm talking about. I think the district does this 100% of its obligation. It's the vendors, it's the insurance companies that are the ones. It's not the district. You know, you're doing everything you can. We are doing everything we can, but it's those people and those companies that we contract with. They're the ones.
Okay, as we redirect this back to the budget discussion, is there any other questions?
I don't expect any new information until property taxes August 15th and state budget late August, maybe not till sometime September.
Thank you.
Any other comments, questions?
No problem going forward with it then.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, I believe, and a second, I forgot by whom, Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
John, my name is Mark.
Mr. Buckman. Mr. Mark. All opposed? Passes 7-0. Julie, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you very much. We have on the agenda next is the approval of middle school schedules for 2008-2009, and Mr. Robinette is moving to the front of the room. I think that's a sure sign.
There you go.
Mr. Robinette.
As the board is aware, there's been somewhat of a groundswell of interest among our elementary schools to have collaboration time, professional teacher collaboration time, much in the same way that our secondary schools have had it. And it's been difficult because of the coordination, the banking of hours, the transportation provision. And sort of a game plan came about with the cooperation of our principals and our teachers and our teachers association and our administration to see if we can get a universal district-wide collaboration period to occur on Monday mornings. And there's still work to be done, obviously, on that. However, because our contracts require that our secondary schools actually vote on their schedule, and as you recall, in February, I believe it was, we shared the results of their vote, middle schools having voted to do an early release Wednesday. The middle schools needed to, in order to effectuate this district-wide a late start date, go back and re-vote. And that's what this item is. Basically, our two middle schools, Los Osos and Laguna, re-voted to reconsider their schedule in favor of a Monday late start schedule instead of a Wednesday early release schedule. And the votes were fairly substantial, 92% at Laguna and 94% at Los Osos. And so the request here is for the board to discuss and or approve these revised schedules for the fall.
You know, I was just going to mention, then we'll go into the questions, underscore what you said, Mr. Robinette, about the cooperation between the parties you mentioned, because this was truly an example of everyone sitting down and really working out what was best, and I think that's an indication.
Middle school, on a late start, it means parents maybe leaving a child who's younger than a high school child at home and expecting them to get off to school by themselves. And I kind of liked the early release on a weekday in terms of the child as opposed to a late start. And I'm wondering if that came up during the discussion.
You know, if I could jump in and respond. It's been a near constant part of the discussion as to when such a thing would happen. The issue began, as you're aware, that secondary schools had their early release days and their collaboration time built in. Middle schools had it on Wednesday afternoons. High schools had it on Monday morning. For the high schools, the morning time was important to them. And the reason morning was important was that all of the extracurricular activities of the high school occur in the afternoon, and that's not just sports, but FFA and arts programs and things like that. so that to schedule collaboration time regularly in the afternoon would have depleted attendance during the collaboration time that would affect many, many departments. And they were firm in their lobbying that it be a morning time. The second piece was that Monday morning was when they already had the collaboration time established, the community was set up, the bus transportation was arranged, and concessions were being made all over the place in order to provide elementary collaboration time. But high schools did not feel that one of those concessions would be changing the day of the week of the already existing collaboration time. It seemed much more logical to have the elementary collaboration time conform to the existing collaboration time.
Catherine?
Also, just from the sites, Mark, just so you know, too, they're very sensitive to the notion that some families will not be able to leave their children at home and will need to get them to school. And so the individual sites are working toward providing opportunities for the children to come and either be taken care of through the Parks and Rec programs or through enrichment programs, Spanish clubs, chess clubs, science clubs. So it actually might end up being a wonderful opportunity for children either to sleep in or to come and participate in new enrichment programs.
We're looking to perhaps even have at some schools.
But Mark, follow up, and then Marilyn has a question.
I'm sorry. What I'm hearing in response to my question is the word elementary as opposed to middle school. So what I'm looking at here is middle school. So are the programs that you're talking about also involve middle school?
Middle school site council. So
okay. So again, I come back. Rick, do you know whether what we're talking about is preschool programs?
Yeah, I don't. I know currently at both of our middle schools, there's after school programs provided.
Right.
Whether those will be kind of shifted to before school, I can't speak to that unless you have any information.
Dr. Matakovic?
Yeah, we've had extensive discussions with principals at all levels in terms of what kind of supervision takes place in this late start Monday. We do have before school programs at the elementary level already, and those programs will be expanded based on need. The middle schools as well are looking at what they can provide at the high school level. We open the library and have gyms available and all of that. So each school is particular in terms of the needs of their community, and the principals are in the process of working that through with their parents and their staff.
So just one last follow-up. In the discussion so far, have parents been involved in the discussion at all? PTA, anything?
Yeah, I believe to a great extent.
Thanks. And Marilyn?
Thank you. I do understand that there are a number of logistical issues that need to be worked out in order to make this work for students. But I think that it's really important to acknowledge that what we're seeing here is middle school teachers that understand the importance of collaboration and are willing to make this adjustment to their schedules in order to facilitate that happening for elementary teachers. And so I thank them for doing that, because I think it is it's just a wonderful collegial thing to do. And certainly the details can be worked out so that it works for students. But I appreciate that elementary teachers are going to have an opportunity to have collaboration.
I'm glad you mentioned that, and I probably should have in my introduction. I don't think our middle schools...
Well, I'll move approval of the middle school schedules for 2008-2009 as outlined in this agenda item. I beg your pardon.
Please come up. We'll hold that motion for a moment.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Janet Gould, principal of Del Mar, and just on behalf of all the elementary school principals, I wanted to publicly thank all of the middle school teachers and the administration there for working so diligently to work a schedule out that will work for the elementary schools, and we're really looking forward to our collaboration time, and we've spent a lot of time with our site council and our teachers and our parents getting ready for next year and talking about working with our kids club, and the local high school has also talked to us about, you know, their students don't start till 9:25 either, and they have a lot of students that are interested in going into teaching, so working in connection with them and having some of their students come over and run programs for our students, so we're excited about it, and we really appreciate the middle school.
Thank you very much, Janice. We have a motion by Ms. Rogers. Is there a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion. A second by Catherine. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Next on the agenda is approval of a general waiver request pursuant to Ed Code 51222 regarding a physical education requirement. Ms. Delkiskamp, thank you.
At the May 20th board meeting, this waiver request was presented as a public hearing item, and we bring it back to you for discussion and action. Just as a brief summary, we need this waiver because students at San Luis Obispo High School complete a full year of physical education in just two trimesters. And because they do that in two trimesters, the education code that requires students to have 400 minutes of PE every 10 days cannot be met during the one trimester when these students are not taking a PE class. In addition, attached with this board item, you requested a summary of the agreements that resulted from the PE waiver committee meetings this year. And some of the key agreements there have to do with offering a physical fitness for health elective for ninth graders, the option of
discussion by the board or the public. Adrian?
I just have a question on the memo from Will Jones, principal, to Mary Matakovich, May 2008, about the PE waiver agreement summary. It says number four, it talks about the HOPE will advertise the fact that course two may be taken at any time after ninth grade. The hope is that this will encourage fewer students to take reduced day in their senior year. How many students take reduced days senior year? You want to just comment a little bit, one of you two great administrators down there, about that whole issue?
All eyes are moving to Mr. Jones.
Yeah, I think Mr. Jones probably has a more specific answer for that.
I can't quote the exact number of seniors, but I would say over the course of, we have a reduced day that students can take either in 11th grade or 12th grade if they are on track for graduation. Usually they have the option of taking a reduced day and still meeting all their graduation requirements, the 270 credits. And I think we have roughly, if not 500 students, if you look at all three trimesters and the request for reduced day over three trimesters, then you may have a request for roughly 400 to 500 reduced day periods over the course of a year.
Is that
juniors and seniors?
Juniors and seniors?
Correct.
500 juniors and seniors.
It wouldn't necessarily. Some students request more than one reduced day, so I can't say it's that number of students total, but that number of requests. And students request reduced day for a variety of reasons, but I would say that that's roughly correct, between 400 and 500 between the two classes for the three trimesters combined.
So a lot of students choose to take an elective or take something else and use their full day and their full opportunity, and others don't want to do that.
Right.
So it's two different years in a row. They don't have to take a full course.
Well, no one can choose a reduced day in their freshman or sophomore year.
Right.
Students, by the time they get to their junior year, if they're on track with their graduation credits, it may open the opportunity for them to take a reduced day. And so we honor that request if they are on track and they look as if they're going to graduate on time and meet all the requirements.
And this is just one of their three trimesters that they drop a course.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Jones?
Approval of item number 11.
We have a motion by Ms. Rogers, by Marilyn. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Catherine. Any discussion? Hearing none? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0. 6-0, excuse me. Thank you for reminding me. Mr. Unger abstained. Self-interest. We'll go to action consent, please. I'm going to call the item, and if anyone would like something pulled, please indicate so. 12, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 13, acceptance of donations. 14, disposition of surplus property. 15, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 16, approval of purchase orders. 17, approval of warrants and payroll. 18, approval of waiver of California High School exit exam requirement for students with disabilities. 19, approval of instructional materials adoption for new modified secondary courses for school year 2008-2009. 20, approval of summer field study trips. 21, approval of international student exchange programs. Hearing none to be pulled, do we have a motion for 12 through 21?
I'll move approval of items 12 through 21.
Second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Buckman, by Mark. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. Now, advanced agenda. Are there any requests by board members for any advanced agenda items? Dr. Valentine. Mr.
Anything Dr. works at 10 at 10:30 at night, we're okay. Just that we had raised, and I believe confirmed, the notion that the board will be holding a retreat for our July 15th, our regularly scheduled July 15th board meeting. I would encourage board members to, and I think you can communicate by email, suggested topics that you may be interested in having processed through the board retreat. The focus of it is essentially a review of board operations over the past year, and a look to how you see those things in the future.
Thank you, Dr. Valentine. And those should be sent directly to your office? Okay. I had one item. I attended the Personnel Commission meeting. Wait a minute, would be helpful.
Yes, both
would
be great.
And if a facilitator would be helpful, can we limit the discussion about who with the person who's provided it to us in the past, unless there's any great objection?
That's certainly the direction we would go in, unless directed otherwise, is to engage the services of the facilitator who's worked with us in the past.
Okay. Thank you. You have your finger on that button, I'm afraid.
I'm going to turn it off as soon as I know you have no further questions.
Oh, he says it's getting late. Marilyn was wondering what your 10:30 comment was. I said, you don't want to know what Ed looks like after 10:30. Okay. I went to the Personnel Commission meeting last week as a board representative regarding their budget proposal, which we have to accept to tell them that we did. And you couldn't see the excitement on their faces. I couldn't get away quickly enough. But we discussed with the board, and Rick confirmed tonight, once a year, the Personnel Commission prepares an annual review of what they've done and what they've accomplished. And I was suggesting, or I asked, if they would feel comfortable coming here to the board on one of our meetings to present their annual review and discuss what work they've done with the classified employees. And according to Mr. Robinette, they thought that they would that was a great idea, and they would love to come at a board meeting, I believe after September, because that's when the annual review is completed in September. And the idea would be is that they would share with us what they're doing with the classified employees, all issues that they become involved with. And it also, I think, is a reaffirmation of the merit system, which is our classified employees' method of interacting with our district. And I think it's important to let the public know and let us know a little bit more about the merit system, which is plays a big role in the administration of this district. So if I have support from another member of the board, I would like to see an agenda item after September of 2008 where the Personnel Commission presents their annual review and discusses their work with the classified employees within the merit system structure. Yeah, that's if Adrian's okay. Okay. Marilyn?
Yeah, I've noticed over the years that when we go through the personnel items, well, let me begin by saying I don't think Mr. Robinette has enough to do. So when we go through the personnel items, that we have, we acknowledge the difficulty.
Do you want?
Do I have support for that in the Friday packet?
Definitely. And also, besides the numbers, do you want to have at least some anecdotal information about maybe the reasons we see the numbers as they are?
If you know, Rick, why, if you do any kind of exit interviews or whatever, I would appreciate that, and I'll take that at your convenience. Doesn't have to be this Friday packet, whenever you're able. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Any other agenda items further? Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion to dismiss in a general sense.
I think we'll make that motion. Oh, please.